been doing oil extraction there about the same period of time as Alaska. They also have a permanent fund, so we're going to talk to their folks that are involved with that.
State lawmakers head to Norway. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, August 26th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Barrow's Ilisagvik College starts a new program to help struggling North Slope students.
Complete their GED, get registered for classes at Ilisagvik, go home in the interim for a little while, and come back ready to and prepared to enter college life.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. And by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
A dozen Alaska state legislators are heading to Norway. The senators and representatives are part of a trip organized by the Institute of the North, a nonprofit group founded by former Governor Wally Hickel to improve understanding of northern issues. Fairbanks Senator Joe Thomas is going on the Norway trip, which is focused on economic and natural resource issues, including hydropower and oil. Thomas says Alaska has a lot in common with Norway on the oil front.
Northern Arctic kind of nation, difficult to develop, difficult to extract the oil, has some of the similar problems. Been doing oil extraction there about the same period of time as Alaska. They also have a permanent fund, so we're going to talk to their folks that are involved with that.
The trip to Norway is costing the state more than $4,000 per legislator. Thomas says it's a worthwhile investment for the perspective. The past legislative session was dominated by debate over whether or not changes are needed to Alaska's oil tax system to spur development, and the issue promises to come up again next year. Thomas says the Norway trip should provide some new insight on Alaska's taxes.
They've adjusted their taxes over the years to address different times, different situations, different exploration modes and that kind of thing. So I think it will be helpful in the long run.
Thomas says Norway is better for Alaska to compare itself to because both areas' oil resources are on public property as opposed to a place like North Dakota where development happens on private land. Norway is different from Alaska in that its oil development is offshore in the North Sea, and it has a state-owned oil company that works alongside independent producers. The state of Alaska is appealing a federal ruling that upholds a 2008 decision to give polar bears federal protection under the Endangered Species Act. Alaska Attorney General John Byrne says the federal government's decision was based on uncertain predictions of future threats of habitat loss, not on observed threats or declining bear numbers. The polar bear is the first designated as threatened under the Endangered Species Act because of global warming. In June, a federal judge in Washington, D.C. upheld the government's decision to protect the bear, finding it was rational given the facts and best available science. Governor Sean Parnell says the bear population has more than doubled in the last 40 years and doesn't merit special protections. The state filed the appeal notice today. State officials are also soliciting proposals for an analysis of the economic costs of Endangered Species Act listings. The Commerce Department seeks responses by September 19th. The department is seeking a study that quantifies the economic impact of the federal government setting aside critical habitat under the Endangered Species Act. According to the solicitation, there has been a constant expansion of use of the act since the 1970s. In Alaska, it says potential or actual listings have stopped, slowed, or threatened development. It says the economic impacts are substantial, but wants to determine the size. There is a $350,000 budget for the project. The notice says the study's authors should seek to have the results published in a respected peer-reviewed journal. The Northern Waters Task Force met in Unalaska this week. The group was created by the state legislature and is tasked with coming up with recommendations on Arctic policy that work for Alaska. KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez was there to learn about the role the Aleutians are expected to play in the changing North.
If there was one takeaway from this week's Northern Waters Task Force meeting, it's that the Arctic is a forbidding place to do business. if there was a second one, it's that a lot of business is going to be happening there anyway not too long from now. While events in Barrow and Kotzebue focused on Arctic drilling and subsistence issues, the conference in Unalaska was all about shipping. At a distance of 1,300 miles, Dutch Harbor is the closest deepwater port to the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas. It's become a staging ground for shale oil, and icebreakers regularly deploy from here on research trips. As the Arctic warms up, it's expected that even more marine traffic will pass through the Aleutian Islands and farther north. That's why about half of the speakers at the meeting were there to talk about vessel safety and emergency response. There was a presentation on salvage operations in icy waters, and another on the history of maritime disasters in the region and how they can be prevented. Carter Whalen of the Alaska Marine Pilots spoke about the need for compulsory pilotage in Arctic waters, despite what he describes as industry resistance to the idea.
You want to take an endeavor this size and scope, unprecedented in such a remote and harsh environment. You want to bring the very best, the brightest, all assets together, oil, industry, the Coast Guard, state government, local government, federal government, pilots, and set the standard of safety at a level that's equal to or above the challenges that you're going to encounter.
Those challenges include extreme weather situations and a lack of marine infrastructure. Whalen argued that Arctic-going vessels should have pilots to help navigate those conditions beyond the 3 miles of state waters. Whalen wasn't the only one advocating for serious policy changes. Senator Lisa Murkowski made an appearance to reiterate her support for the Law of the Sea Treaty, an international agreement that settles rules and territorial claims in the Arctic.
As an Arctic nation, which the United States of America is, I believe that we have a role, an obligation, a duty, and a responsibility. I think that we are best suited or best seated if we have a seat at the table.
Murkowski also stressed the need to expand the Coast Guard's fleet and to bring more icebreakers up to Alaska. The Northern Waters Task Force will be holding additional meetings in Anchorage and Bethel in October, and their recommendations are due to the legislature this January. In Unalaska, I'm Alexander Gutierrez.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new set of dog laws for Bethel.
From what I've heard around town, there would be lots of volunteers who would want to go round up loose dogs.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com. And by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for over 30 years.
A former Anchorage High School choir instructor will serve 13 years in prison after being convicted of 2 counts of sexually abusing a minor. Christopher Moore was sentenced to a 25-year term today, but the judge suspended 12 years. Moore was accused of having sexual relations with 2 of his students at West High School. Moore apologized and asked Judge Philip Volan for leniency before sentencing. He pleaded guilty to the 2 counts in March, and prosecutors agreed to drop 4 other charges. There's a new set of dog control laws in the western Alaska city of Bethel. It includes the authorization of a new force of animal control volunteers. On Tuesday night, the city council there passed a sweeping set of changes aimed at improving the safety of people and property on Bethel streets. The vote was passed unanimously, but not everyone on the council thinks the laws will help. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Shane Iverson has more.
Backers of the new law say they're aimed at fixing several issues, not the least of which is loose dogs roaming Bethel streets.
I've got a lot of neighbors personally in the area where I live, and we have rampant loose dogs.
That's council member Heather Pike.
And lots of small children running around. And this, I feel, would really help.
The law will authorize the city of Bethel to create a volunteer staff of animal control officers, similar to volunteer firefighters. These volunteers would be empowered to capture loose dogs and issue citations. Councilmember Rick Robb.
From what I've heard around town, there would be lots of volunteers who would want to go round up loose dogs.
In the past, the council has hired a full-time animal officer. but that position has been cut over years of city belt tightening. Rob said volunteers could be a cheaper option.
There would be some cost, but significantly, on multiple times, cheaper than hiring additional personnel.
Not everyone agrees. The volunteer officers program would operate under the supervision of the chief of police. Councilmember Thor Williams said the work to coordinate the program will likely fall on his shoulders unless they hired someone to work with the volunteers.
It's still going to cost a ton of money just to have a volunteer program. So I'd rather see a city employee whose main function it is to collect dogs again.
Currently, the city gives the duties primarily to community patrol officers, whose main job is to take care of inebriates. But complaints of loose dogs are still high, and the police department says they bite several children in a typical week. The volunteers would also have the authority to cite owners of nuisance dogs. The new law defines those dogs as ones that bark for over 20 minutes consecutively during the day or 10 minutes at night. Exemptions are carved out for dog teams and licensed kennels. Rob says the intention is to allow average barking dogs to continue to act like regular dogs while giving the city more options when complaints come in for noisy ones. The law also makes it illegal for dogs to be off their leash or a chain for any reason, unless they're in a specified dog park. There used to be a provision that allowed for pets to be under voice control in most sections of town, but now that will only be allowed in specific areas, areas which are yet to be set. Despite the changes, Councilmember Williams said the root of the problem is that there are simply too many dogs in Bethel because residents don't have access to cheap spaying or neutering.
We're still making puppies out there, and we haven't eliminated the puppy problem. So unless we really address that issue, for me, I don't think this law is going to answer the problem.
Despite his reservations, Williams went on to vote in favor of the new laws, along with all other council members. Missing was Tundi Rogers. The law also has new requirements for licensing and sets new rules before dogs are put down. Also, it doubles fines for most violations. The laws went into effect immediately. I'm Shane Iverson.
After graduating its largest class ever this past spring, Barrow's Illisogvik College kicked off its fall semester on Monday. In its effort to serve Alaskans, especially those on the North Slope, it has enacted a few new programs. APRN's Josh Edge reports.
Last spring, Illisogvik College completed one of its most successful years, graduating a school-best 87 students with degrees and certificates, and another 11 who received their GEDs. With that still fresh on her mind, college president Dr. Brooke Gondera is excited as the school year gets underway.
Our dorm students arrived yesterday and are moving in tonight. Registration's taking place. The bookstore is going to be hopping, and so we're all very excited with the energy of the upcoming year.
According to Gondera, being the only tribal college in the state and one of only 37 in the nation, Illisogvik College is in an advantageous position.
We can respond very quickly and responsively to industry needs, and we don't have to necessarily get all our course offerings approved through another university system or those kinds of things, that we're able to cut through some of the layers that happen at a bigger university in order to get things done. So we're being able to continue to respond to workforce needs on the slope and put people, and particularly Inupiaq people, in jobs, in high-skilled, high-paying positions on the North Slope.
Teacher education and training, especially in early childhood education, is in high demand in the state. Gondera says the college is beginning to cater to those needs.
We've got a project that's going on with that that's centered around language immersion through a language nest model that happens in the home or in a small home-based kind of caregiving center that also has a neat economic development component to it, so that families or households can earn an income while providing language-based childcare, and that they can also enter into a degree or certificate program and pursue a degree in early childhood education if they would like to.
Gondera says Illisogvik also offers a strong GED program, but it takes a unique approach.
Our pilot project has entailed reaching out to students in Kivalina who may be interested in completing their GED and coming to Barrow and coming to Illisogvik for a short-term period of time, where we are building the structure of the program where they would work for, I believe, in about a five-week module to complete their GED. Get registered for classes at Illisogvik, go home in the interim for a little while, and come back ready to and prepared to enter college life.
Gondera says Ilisavik currently has satellite campuses in 8 villages, covering around 89,000 square miles. With help from APRN's Patrick Yak in Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
A Southeast Regional Law Enforcement Coalition spearheaded by Sitka's police chief received honors from the federal government Tuesday night. Southeast Alaska Cities Against Drugs, or CCAD, is a coalition of 11 communities. It was named Outstanding Agency of 2010 by the U.S. Department of Justice's Western States Information Network. Sitka Police Chief Sheldon Schmidt said the CCAD task force is comprised of 3 full-time people, including a Sitka-based narcotics detective, who work with area law enforcement agencies.
People ask you, what are we doing about drugs in Southeast? Well, CCAD is really what we're doing. Any arrest or any case, big case in Southeast, CCAD usually has a hand in it. So this award is really for the men and women who are working, putting themselves in harm's way.
Skip Coyle, who presented the award to CCAD, said the coalition shares intelligence with a national database that helps officers elsewhere pursue and apprehend criminals.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Support for AK comes from the Federal Aviation Administration, providing information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. FAA.gov/go/flyalaska or toll free at 1-866-357-4704. The Rasmussen Foundation Sabbatical Program offers nonprofit executives and tribal leaders paid time away from their jobs for personal renewal and growth. As a result, organizations often become stronger. October 1st is the deadline to apply. Learn more at Rasmussen.org. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Tony Gorman. Today on AK, letters, the old-fashioned kind. It's probably safe to say that most people, especially those under 50, rarely, if ever, sit down, put pen to paper, lick envelope glue, and put a letter in the mailbox. But an Anchorage club of self-proclaimed letter nerds, all under 40, are doing exactly that. APRN's Lori Townsend has the story.
In amongst the electric, gas, and credit card bills, who doesn't love the sweet surprise of finding an honest-to-goodness handwritten letter in their mailbox? Letter nerd club founder Kyle Hopkins takes it up a notch from there.
I have a little wax stamp. After I've licked the envelope and, you know, sealed it and stuff, I seal it with wax and put a little stamp on it. It's like a little dog face stamp.
Hopkins is a 34-year-old reporter for the Anchorage Daily News. On a recent sunny Sunday afternoon, tucked into a small conference room at a downtown coffee shop, Hopkins is joined by 6 other young professionals who have forfeited a precious Alaskan summer afternoon to sit down and write letters or postcards, as is the theme on this particular day. He says he's wanted to start the club for a few years to make time for the disappearing art of handwritten letters to his friends, family, and although he'd started writing a journal for his young daughter Alice before she was born.
The idea was that, like, every few days I'd just write a couple paragraphs. You know, you're coming along nicely, you know, or whatever. But I was kind of getting bad about doing that, too.
So Letter Nerds was born, and he formalized Time for Letters from Dad.
Like today we were berry picking, right? So I'll write her a postcard today that will describe, yeah, we went to Arctic Valley, we went berry picking, and you picked, like, you know, handfuls of berries, and then you chased Puggy around, and then you got cranky on the way home, but then you got a steamed milk. You know, like, just to kind of tell her about the day, right? So each meeting, like, I figured I would do one letter to her.
He wrote to Martha Stewart to get an autographed photo for his wife, who is a fan. He said Stewart sent it, along with a sales pitch to buy her stationery. He also thinks handwritten letters can have more important impact. He said researching an article he was writing on suicide revealed that writing letters to someone who is struggling can help them feel cared about and connected. UAA psychology professor Anju Bhargava is writing to her nephews today, but she says she's used letter writing to help grieving clients feel connected.
Like to a parent or something like that, even if they never send it, just to get out your emotions, because I think it helps a lot and it's very cathartic even if no one else is reading it. One time I had a client whose boyfriend had passed away, And then at the end of our treatment, she had been writing this letter over the course of the semester, and then we read it together.
Trina Landlord handles communications for the Alaska Native Arts Foundation. She likes to write in story form, reading here from a letter she's writing to her grandmother, who lives on the banks of the Yukon in Mountain Village.
My roommate Gretchen is an artist. She's been painting lately about the topic of migration, about the animals we eat, the salmon, moose, whales, birds, and everything, and how they always leave but come back. About the humans...
Hopkins bought the domain name for Letter Nerds for $8, but a quick search online finds he's not alone in his interest in old-fashioned letters. You can find everything from how to physically compose a letter...
Dear Natasha. No, my dearest Schmoopy. Roses are red, violets are blue. How do I love thee? Let me count the... No. You light up my... No. You are the
to sunshine... To a writer bemoaning his diet.
Dear carbs, I miss you so much. It's only been a week, but I just can't get you out of my mind. Fruits and vegetables are boring. Who wants to eat a parsnip? Nobody. Mashed potatoes, biscuits, lasagna. Spelling?
Meanwhile, at Letter Nerds, Veronica Levin says she started attending for a practical reason we'll get to in a minute. But she's here today to write to her young nephews down south. And what does one write to a seven-year-old?
Hey, I heard you caught a snake. That's really great. You know, something like that.
And getting back to the practical start to her attendance at Letter Nerds.
The club started around the same time that my husband and I were having trouble finishing or making our thank you card deadline. So it had already been like 7 or 8 months since we'd been married, and we still hadn't finished our thank you cards.
They used the first three meetings to successfully get them written. Her co-conspirator was across the table. Scott Levin is a web editor for the Anchorage Daily News. He says he gets digital fatigue at work, and Letter Nerds is a nice anecdote to that. But beyond writing thank you cards...
I have not written an actual letter, and I think that would be very difficult for me. But it's obviously a beautiful thing. And I've gotten letters. Veronica sent me a letter about 4 years ago. She probably doesn't even remember.
On a day like today, we pass the time away, writing love letters in the sand.
Letter Nerds has logged more than 200 handwritten missives so far. They have a website, letternerds.com, and a Facebook page. And it seems to be catching on. A chapter is now forming in Fairbanks. In Anchorage, and sincerely yours, I'm Lori Townsend.
And now it's time for our weekly trip around the state for 300 villages. This week, we head north to Barrow, more specifically to hang out with the Barrow Whalers football team.
My name is Darius Samuelu. I was born in Anchorage, Alaska, and moved up here to Barrow to play some football. Here, it's all about basketball, but this year we're trying to change the view of the people so that, you know, it's not only basketball, football can mean something to the community too. And so this year we're trying to go all the way to state, hopefully, so that we can prove that, you know, football deserves as much hype as basketball.
Hey, I'm Nathaniel Samuelu. Originally born in Anchorage. Right now my position is middle linebacker on defense, left guard on offense. The different thing about it is, you know, down in Anchorage I played with bigger guys, and up here there's a lot of smaller guys, but I see a lot of heart, you know, and I see a lot of, you know, mental toughness that we can work on. You know, we keep working on that, then guaranteed we'll make it far. Anchorage was a lot warmer, you know, playing up here in the wind and the cold. You know, you need your long sleeves, you know, no more cutoffs. And, you know, you just got to get used to it. Especially the wind, you know, has a big effect in the games. So So practicing, it makes it a lot better to get used to it up here. Putting on that uniform, it's a dream come true for me. You know, I never thought I'd be playing football. We represent Barrow, the blue and gold, you know. The Barrow Whalers are here, and football is a big thing. It's growing, so hopefully we do something to impact the community.
I'm Trace Hudson, and I'm from Texas, Houston, Texas. And I play running back. Never have played in a climate like this. It's pretty cold for me. I have to wear, you know, Under Armour and all kinds of layers to keep warm, and gloves and hats. It's not what I'm used to. I have played in the snow, and it's crazy because, you know, your hands get to where you can't feel them, and I mean, just the slightest contact with anything, it hurts really bad. So, but I mean, you can get over that, the adrenaline from the game. I love being a Whaler because, I mean, we're all the way up here at the top of the world, top of Alaska. We get to, we get to travel to all different places of Alaska, and then that's just fun.
That was Darius Samuelu, Nathaniel Samuelu, and Trace Hudson, all members of the Barrow Whalers football team. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every village in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK. We had help this week from Pat Yak and APRN's Josh Edge. Tune in next week when we visit a native carving class. I'm Tony Gorman.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska, Shane Iverson in Bethel, and Ed Ronco in Sitka. APRN's Josh Edge reported from Anchorage. Tony Gorman was our guest host for AK this week. Our audio engineer is Dave Aldrin, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. We all need energy to power our homes and businesses. Tapping renewable energy sources like wind, geothermal, and hydro helps keep our economy local, creating jobs, revenue, and power for the state. Learn more at realaska.org. This message sponsored by Renewable Energy Alaska Project, committed to creating a sustainable economic future for Alaska. Check the status of your application at pfd.alaska.gov. August 31st is the deadline for placing half in a college savings account and to add or change charitable donations. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.